Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
After months and months of uncertainty, we finally got a decision by Bryce Harper, and he is headed to the Philadelphia Phillies for a 13-year, $330 million deal. No opt-out in that contract, no trade clause, no deferred money. It's all the biggest contract per dollars in the history of Major League Baseball. In fact, here are the largest contracts in pro team sports history. According to our buddy Darren Revelle, Bryce Harper got $330 million from the Phillies. Giancarlo Stanton got $325 million from the Yankees. Manny Machado, $300 million from the Padres, including that being a 10-year, $30 million per contract. A-Rod is on here twice, first for a $275 million deal with the Yankees and second for a $252 million deal with the Rangers and the Yankees. Now, to put that into perspective for Bryce Harper, he's going to make $44,929 per plate appearance based on how many at-bats he's had so far in his career. And this is wild. He's going to make nearly $157,000 per game for the next 13 years of Major League Baseball, which is just wild in the extreme to think about that being possible. Now, a couple of things also on top of this contract. It actually isn't that bad of a deal for the Phillies in this context. He's only making $25.4 million per year. And it sounds like a lot of money. But if you look at the top salaries in the NBA, where guys are regularly making over $30 million a year, and if you look at the top salaries in the NFL, where a guy like Aaron Rodgers is making over $30 million a year, while they aren't long, multi-year $25 million a year deals, it actually doesn't seem to me that at the end of this deal, like the Phillies are going to be looking around saying, oh my God, I can't believe we paid this much money for Bryce Harper. In fact, if you put this in the context of, and I think it's kind of important to do, when you put this in the context of inflation, this is not even one of the 10 biggest baseball contracts of all time. I think what Bryce Harper wanted here was to be able to say, I'm signing a deal for the most money of all time. I think that was his goal the entire offseason. According to Bob Nightingale, these were his final three offers. The Dodgers, who had emerged as the favorite down the stretch, offered him 3 years, $135 million, or 4 years, $168 million. I think I probably would have taken that if I was Bryce Harper and gambled on myself, because you would have been coming back to the market around the age of 30. The Giants offered him 12 years, $310 million, and the Phillies got him to that 13-year, $330 million offer in order for him to be able to brag that he has now signed the biggest contract in the history of Major League Baseball. We'll see what the long-range impact of this deal is going to be, but again, I don't think it's crippling to the Phillies. We'll see how healthy Bryce Harper can be, and we'll see how well he plays in the city of brotherly love now that he is officially there. He is 26 years old now. He will be playing with the Phillies until he is 38 years old, which is pretty wild to think about in that context. A couple of other details that were big. Kyler Murray measures in at 5'10 1/8". That's just a half inch shorter than Russell Wilson. I think he will be the overall number one pick in the NFL draft in April. I don't think there's any doubt at all about it. He now, as soon as he put those measurements up, also weighed over 200 pounds. As soon as he came in at those measurements, he went from kind of a long shot to be the overall number one pick in the offshore odds market to moving up to number two directly behind Nick Bosa and being a lot of momentum on his name. I think the Arizona Cardinals are going to trade him. If you didn't see this, Josh Rosen stripped all references to the Arizona Cardinals from his Instagram account after the quotes yesterday or 2 days ago from the Arizona Cardinals GM about how Josh Rosen was the quarterback for the Cardinals right now. I think they are going to try to find a way to move him and get rid of him. And that will clear up the Cardinals being able to draft Kyler Murray. The other big story, and ordinarily this would stand out as a wild story by itself, Jason Witten, who abruptly retired and went to work with Monday Night Football, has now decided to come back to the Dallas Cowboys and leave the Monday Night Football booth and go play for another year. When I saw this news come across on Twitter, we're getting closer to April Fool's Day, I thought maybe I was getting pranked when I saw the official Dallas Cowboy Twitter account tweeted out. I had to click on it a couple of times to make sure that it was real. But Jason Witten coming back for one more go-around with the Dallas Cowboys, I think this is a sign more than anything else of how difficult it is for athletes to hang up and stop doing what they've been doing their entire lives. We don't talk about this a lot, but the athletic lifestyle is very regimented and very focused. And so Jason Witten, probably since about ninth grade, has been maniacally focused on being a football player, going through high school, going through college, and then certainly once he got to the NFL with the Dallas Cowboys. And that came to a screeching halt when he went into the advertising booth. Do I think that Jason Witten would have come back to play another year for the Dallas Cowboys if he had been anywhere near as good as Tony Romo in the booth? No way. No way imaginable. I think that Witten had a very rough first year. The Monday Night Football trio that they put on in the booth there was Joe Tessitore, who I thought was very average with Witten. Then you had Witten, and then you had Booger McFarland in that random Boogermobile on the sideline that never made a lot of sense. I thought that was a fundamentally broken trio, and that ESPN probably needed to go back and figure out what made sense as they came in for year two of Monday Night Football. But I think probably what happened here is Tony Romo was so good that he fooled a lot of television executives because he came in and dominated in his very first year, first game of Tony Romo's career with Jim Nance in the broadcast booth. He was already better at calling games than he'd ever been in as a quarterback, and Tony Romo was a really good quarterback. And so I think that set false expectations for what you could expect from a guy like Jason Witten. And as a result, I think Witten was stung by the criticism that he got working on Monday Night Football. I think he wanted to still be back in the locker room, and it's wild to think about. But I think as an athlete, he realized, wow, media members now on social media actually get criticized as much or more than athletes do. And I think that's certainly true. And he bristled at that criticism. He wasn't prepared for it. And he wants one last go around with the Dallas Cowboys. I also think Jason Witten has an interest in being a football coach. I really do. And I think doing 1 year of Monday Night Football convinced him even more so that he wants to be a football coach. And maybe, and this, I don't even think this is a wild idea, maybe Jason Witten could end up on the Dallas Cowboy coaching staff before all is said and done. I know he has a good relationship with Jerry Jones, and so I think he sees this as a better platform to continue to think about what he wants to do when his career is over. Plus, he gets to go back into Dallas with a decent team, and maybe in a best-case scenario, the Cowboys could finally put together a legitimate postseason run, and Dak Prescott, in what is likely to be a contract year for him, could go out and take the Cowboys to the Super Bowl. That would be a hell of an ending to Jason Witten's career, regardless of how impactful he was on the team, if he got to finish the season holding the Lombardi Trophy. I don't think that's very likely, and I don't think it's very likely that he's going to be a substantial impact on this team, but I think this was all about his reaction to being incredibly criticized surrounding Monday Night Football.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We talked a lot about the Robert Kraft arrest for prostitution, solicitation of prostitution. And he pled not guilty yesterday to charges in that case. And I actually, the more time I spend looking at this case, I think there's a good chance that Robert Kraft is going to beat these charges in all seriousness. He's got a top attorney down in Florida. There's been a lot of talk about how Roger Goodell is going to handle this. What penalty is he going to levy? I think there's a good chance that this charge is beaten. And let me explain why. And this is going to be a more intelligent analysis than you're going to hear anywhere else in the world of sports media. So listen closely. I'm going to put my lawyer hat on here. First of all, there has been much discussion about the fact that this is allegedly some part of a sex trafficking ring. But the two women who are alleged to be involved in the Robert Kraft case, neither one of them is sex trafficked. They're both over 50 years old, I believe, when you look at their ages, or 57 and 47 or something like that. And there's a suggestion that Robert Kraft has a long-term relationship with them. These two women went and came and went very freely from this massage parlor. So while there has been a lot of talk about sex trafficking, in the Robert Kraft story in particular, there is no indication that the women he was involved with were being sex trafficked. Okay? That's an important detail. Further, if you read this affidavit, there is a report that Robert Kraft went to this massage parlor 2 days in a row and that they stopped him on the first day in his car as he drove away. He was a passenger in the vehicle and he had a chauffeur, and the police stopped him so they could figure out who he was after they surveilled him and saw him go into this establishment. I think there is a strong argument that the police had no reason to stop him the first time that they did in his vehicle when he wasn't driving and when the driver of his vehicle was not committing any vehicular violation. In other words, the only reason the police stopped Robert Kraft that first day was to figure out who he was. They asked him for his driver's license as a precept when they pulled this car over. The reason why I bring that up, their ability to identify Robert Kraft seems to be potentially in question here because there was no legitimate reason why they would have stopped him on that particular day in question. Furthermore, it seems to me that what the police were trying to do here in this six-month investigation was find a famous person to embarrass and draw attention to their overall work from a police perspective. They said, oh, we're worried about the sex trafficking that is allegedly going on here. If that's true, why didn't you immediately free all of the women? Why did you need to get a warrant to allow you to watch what was going on in these back rooms? Why were you doing what you were doing? To me, this seems as if not the police were trying to do their job to protect these women. It seems like they were trying to find a man to humiliate. Further, and this goes to the root of the solicitation charge itself, and again, this is me putting on my lawyer hat, based on the description in the video, first of all, why couldn't Robert Kraft argue that he had a long-standing relationship with one of these women and that initially he started going in for a massage and then that relationship grew to the point where they started to provide him sexual services because they had some sort of affinity for him? And you may think that's crazy, but take it outside of the relationship in a massage parlor. You can pay a woman to give you a massage, right? whatever you want to do, if you've ever stayed in a hotel, spa treatment is one of the most popular things that goes on in a hotel. It's one of the most lucrative things they do. Paying someone $100 or more, or $50 or $75 or whatever it is, to give you a massage is both commonplace and legal. What is not legal is the happy ending, right? That's the part that is in question here. But what if Robert Kraft is arguing that this is part of a larger relationship, that he got to know these women, that initially when he started to go there, all he would do is get a massage, and then along the way, they, of their own volition, started to do this for him, and then he was just tipping them for their behavior. In other words, he wasn't soliciting the act, they were choosing to do it. Is there audio of him saying, I will give you $100 to give me a happy ending in this massage? I mean, these are really interesting questions when you're going to say that he was soliciting sex. He was paying for a massage. What if this woman just naturally decides to finish the massage this way and then he tips her? Take it outside of the world of the massage treatment. If you go get a haircut, you pay for the haircut. If at the end of the haircut, you get a special shampoo, which you didn't pay for, as a way to finish off the haircut, you probably are going to tip the hairstylist more money than you otherwise would have. But you would not have specifically ordered the shampoo finishing treatment or the scalp massage or whatever else. This is very commonplace. If you go into a restaurant, how many times has it happened for you that maybe you get an extra drink or you get an extra dessert and the waiter or waitress is doing that because of their own volition? You didn't order it, but they know that you are going to tip them better if they do it because it's further service on top of what you have already paid for. You may think these sound like crazy arguments. I think they're actually really sound. And I think there's a very good chance that Robert Kraft could beat these charges when his attorney actually dives into them and starts to argue the merits of this case before potentially a jury, and does all of the motions to try to throw the fact that the car was stopped the first time. I'm not sure that the police procedural work here is without flaw. I haven't heard very many people talk about this, but this is me putting on my lawyer hat. I think there's a decent chance that Robert Kraft and his attorneys could find a way to beat these charges and be not guilty of solicitation. So when he says, I'm not guilty, and a lot of people roll their eyes, and a lot of people have already started to take the next step and say, how is the NFL going to punish Robert Kraft in this case? I think there's a decent chance that Robert Kraft is able to beat these charges, because I don't think this case is very sound when you actually look at all of the specifics. Again, I have yet to hear that there's audio of Robert Kraft saying, I'm buying a massage, which is legal, and then I want you to give me a happy ending, and I will pay you for that on top of the massage. Think about that for a minute now. If you were on a jury and you have to convict Robert Kraft beyond a reasonable doubt, and Robert Kraft's defense is, I paid for a massage, I didn't specifically order the happy ending, the masseuse just went ahead and did that, and then when she did, I tipped her because I always tip on the massage. How can you prove that he solicited? Usually solicitation requires audio of you saying, hey, I will pay you for sex. And again, I know a lot of people out there, you're not really thinking about this as a lawyer should, or as you would if you were on a jury. And that's why I say, take it out of the massage parlor. How many times have you gone and gotten a haircut and ended up paying more as a tip for that haircut because of something that your hairstylist did for you that was not specifically ordered by you? How many times have you been in a restaurant and given a waiter or a waitress more money because they brought you a free dessert or because they brought you an extra appetizer, or because they brought you an extra drink that didn't actually show up on the bill. That's insanely commonplace. How many times have you sat down at a bar, and if you know the bartender, how many times has the bartender brought you a free drink? And then you end up tipping the bartender, oftentimes, whatever the free drink might have cost. But you didn't specifically order any of that from the hairstylist or the waitress or the bartender. You didn't solicit that particular product, which you might have ultimately consumed. And then as a favor, you go ahead and tip somebody on top of it. That's not even considering whether the police stop, which allowed them to identify Robert Kraft when he was a passenger in that vehicle, was even legal. If it isn't, then you might have to toss that out, and the police then wouldn't be able to prove that this was Robert Kraft without having used improper evidence. We call that fruit of the poisonous tree. It's a very important legal doctrine. If you get evidence illegally, it's considered fruit of the poisonous tree. You can't then use that evidence to prove criminality. I want you to put a pin in this story and remember me talking about it probably months before anybody else is even going to realize it. I think when I look at all the evidence and all the facts in this case, Robert Kraft has a really good defense, and I'm not sure the state of Florida is going to be able to convict him of soliciting a prostitute, particularly when you consider that I'm sure Robert Kraft has the best criminal defense attorney in that region of South Florida. He's going to be able to use a lot of the arguments I just made, and I think Robert Kraft may beat this.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We are joined now by John Morosi, our Major League Baseball expert. Perfect timing because Bryce Harper's never-ending free agency, which is now stretched for over 6 months, is officially complete. He has agreed to join the Phillies for a 13-year, $330 million contract. John, ultimately, right decision, wrong decision, who wins here?
Well, first of all, Clay, I have to give you credit for the great instincts. Today was two nights ago you said, JP, how about
yes.
How about Friday morning this week? And you nailed it, man. This was the day we could finally talk about the deal getting done. So well produced, well hosted as always, my friend.
Lucky indeed. when you hear, like, so there's a lot of talk about how this is the biggest contract in the history of American pro sports, and that's true. But if you put it in context of years, dollar value per year, and also inflation value, looking back at several of those A-Rod contracts, for instance, it's not the highest ever. Do you think that was the primary goal throughout this entire offseason, that Bryce Harper wanted to set an all-time record, even if he had to go for a super long 13-year deal?
Yes. I also think, and this is something that Scott Boras told me last night and has told others before as well, that Bryce Harper wanted to be a free agent one time, and he wanted to have the longest-term contract he could without any opt-outs. And that means he wants to be able to sell other people on coming to Philadelphia because he himself is invested fully in that organization, really for the balance of his career, which surprised me a little bit. And even more generally, I thought that once the Dodgers and Giants were in there, at least on the per-year basis, that would have helped Bryce set a record for the highest per-annum salary, which, of course, he did not do. And I think, to Ken Rosenthal's point, he's basically 19th overall, I believe, in terms now of per-year salary in the game's history, Bryce's priorities were different than what I thought they were going to be. I thought he was going to be focused on playing in the West Coast, playing close to home, setting maybe the per-year record, and, of course, his priorities were quite different from that. And I think, Clay, the biggest thing that I'll say about his decision is that Bryce Harper has done you and I and all of us that talk about the game a great favor, because he is staying in a place where the drama is baked into the pie, if you will, because he's going to be playing against his original team 18 times a year. He's still going to get booed in the places where he's always been booed. That meaning the Mets and the Braves fans are going to certainly be booing him. The Nationals fans will now as well. And as you know and as I know, if things do not go well in Philly, he'll get booed in Philly too. So and this, to me, I look at it and say, I hope Bryce knows what he's getting into. And the other part is, I'm sure he does. He has always been comfortable in the spotlight, Clay, and he is going to be in the spotlight in a massive way, more than ever before, by playing for the Philadelphia Phillies. It would have been, in my judgment, a much easier ride to play for the Giants or the Dodgers. New division, new start, closer to home, just not the same type of probably the environment is what he's going to find in Philadelphia. So that to me is how I read this situation.
When I look at the contract, he's going to average roughly $25.4 million per year over the length of this deal. It doesn't seem like an exorbitant amount now to me, and it certainly is not going to seem like an exorbitant amount 7, 8, 9 years from now as contracts continue to go up. I look at this and say, sometimes in baseball contracts, it seems people have paid like drunken sailors. And I feel like that often happens now in, for instance, the NBA. But this doesn't seem like that outlandish of a contract from the Phillies' perspective. Would you agree with that?
I agree, certainly on a year-by-year basis. That is a surprise. I was surprised when I heard the number was 330 that the number of years has gotten as high as it did to really annualize that.
Because you would have thought there's probably going to be like a 10-year or 9-year deal,
right,
when you heard 330,
precisely.
Right?
Exactly. Or even 11. But when you think about it, and I reported yesterday that the Dodgers were willing to go $45 million a year for 4 years.
Yeah.
So that to me, and others have said maybe it was a touch lower than that, but the reality is it was somewhere in that range of between $42 and $45 million a year that the Dodgers were willing to go to, and that would have set the per year basis record in baseball by a wide margin. Right now it's about $34 million a year by Zach Greinke, so he would have shattered that by at a minimum $8 million and potentially as much as $10 or $11 million. So he would have been and there's something to be said for that, Clay. You take the upfront money and then you go out and become a free agent again at age 30. The Dodgers did not win the bidding, but that's a real offer.
That's what I would have done.
Yeah, some people would have actually preferred that if you really annualize it out and realize what you still could have made and upfront money versus then sign the next contract. There's a case to be made that would have been financially maybe even the smarter play.
Look, I mean, I make a pinprick of what any pro athlete makes, but I don't ever like to sign long-term deals because I believe I'm good at what I do. And I would, if you told me right now you can do a year-to-year contract, I'd be totally fine with that because I think I'm good at what I do and I think my value is going to increase every year for the next decade. And when I saw those numbers that you put out and I saw the story about what the Dodgers were offering, the decision to take the 13 years doesn't make a lot of sense to me unless, and this is where I was going to ask you, is there concern about baseball's overall like lockout, strikes, how the baseball system is going to be set up in the years ahead? And he wanted to guarantee himself because he thought maybe this is a broken system and there are going to be issues ahead. Is there anything looming on the horizon that would make you want to sign a deal this long?
Well, Clay, I can tell you that some agents this winter have been trying to front-load a contract a little bit, where they've actually been making more money in the initial years of a multi-year deal, and then it decreases a little bit towards the end. Now, I believe we've got we certainly have 3 years before the next CBA expires, and so that's not until after 2021. So in that sense, Clay, you could have even argued that if you were really worried about fundamental change and disruptive change, I suppose you could have said, hey, I'm going to take that four-year offer and get all the money I can before the CBA expires, and then we'll kind of worry about life after that. But that's one possible school of thought on it. I personally am optimistic that MLB and the union already talking about different on-field play matters right now. I think they're going to be able to avoid any sort of strife down the line. There'll be some intense negotiations and maybe even some emotional statements on either side that make us concerned about that possibility. But I think in general, labor peace is going to continue. And if anything, Clay, if you were concerned about labor peace, you might have actually accepted the Dodgers offer because that would have given you the more upfront money.
No, it's a good point as well. Where does this leave the Dodgers and the Giants? Two storied franchises that obviously felt, I mean, I think based on their offers, that they have a window to win a World Series. That's the other thing that jumps out to me is when you want to sign a guy for 3 or 4 years, it's because you're saying, okay, we have the talent to do this now. Who knows what our team will look like in the next 5 to 10 years? Where does this leave them?
Well, the Dodgers still in a very strong position. And although they thought that next winter time they were going to have a chance to sign Nolan Arenado, who I think is one of the best 3 or 4 players in the game, instead Nolan has signed this long-term deal with the Rockies to stay with the division rivals. So that was a difficult bit of news for the Dodgers, and now, of course, Bryce's decision as well. In the future, you may have a Mookie Betts, Francisco Lindor, some great players that are coming in as free agents, but in general, right now, Clay, the Dodgers are still the favorites in that division, but a little bit of nervous news this spring about Clayton Kershaw not being able to really throw a bullpen or in a competitive setting yet because of a shoulder issue. So that is speaking to, I think, the challenge of going for it still and relying a lot on Kershaw, who they just re-signed this winter. So Dodgers, to me, still favorites in the division, still have a chance to win the World Series, but they have decided against investing and really leveraging their future to a long-term deal for one particular superstar player. They've really been reluctant to do that. As a result, they did not get Bryce Harper here. The Giants, I think they're really still in the initial phases, Clay, of a rebuild, reboot, whatever you want to call it, under a new president of baseball operations, Farhan Zaidi, who probably didn't really envision Harper being part of the club when the offseason began anyway. But the possibility became real. They tried. They offered more than 10 years, according to Alex Pavlovich of the NBC Sports out there in San Francisco. So they did a good job to get in the conversation. But for them, it's more of a long game anyway. So not getting Harper, to me, is maybe not quite as devastating for the Giants as it actually is to the Dodgers because of how they have a chance to win the World Series this year.
Last question for you. If Bryce Harper gets this and Manny Machado got what he got, what in the world is Mike Trout going to be worth when he hits free agency?
Well, it's a great question, and certainly there's going to be a lot of conversation there. One thing about Trout that's unique is we're seeing this trend in the game where really dictates what you're going to get paid. And so Mike's going to be 2 years older, but I still think you look at what he's done, he is probably going to find a way to get even more than Bryce. $350, $375 maybe. The money in baseball, Clay, it's pretty good.
Outstanding stuff as always, John Morosi. I know I said last question for you, but do you think the Bryce Harper extended long-range free agency is going to become a trend in baseball? Because we see nothing like this in the NBA or the NFL or the NHL where top players come out and it feels like within a couple of days, by and large, we know exactly what they're going to do once they can sign. Or was Bryce Harper unique in the prolonged process of his free agency?
Well, of course, it happened this year as well for Manny Machado. Happened last year for JD Martinez. I have had multiple say to me, Clay, that there is a very little incentive to act quickly in the way that the current rules are set up. So barring a change in the rules, we may well see still teams deciding to take their time and the really big ticket items don't get signed until February or March.
Outstanding stuff as always. We'll be talking to John Morosi every week. He's our Major League Baseball expert. Go follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. Good stuff, my man.
My pleasure, Clay. Great to catch up again. Thank you.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I want to bring in the crew. Kyler Murray, no one expected to be over 5'10". In this day and age where Hollywood can create almost anything with prosthetics, would you be stunned if they added a prosthetic heel to add a half inch or potentially an inch to his overall height? And would you use it if you knew that adding an inch to your height could mean tens of millions of dollars in additional income for you? What do you think, Danny G? Is this a crazy idea? Nobody has ever had, that I can remember, a official listing in college which is shorter than his official listing when he shows up at the NFL Combine. Usually college heights are exaggerated, right? Like, you know, in your basketball or football or whatever it is, or they measure you in cleats versus measuring you flat-footed, like all these things, such that usually you are listed taller and bigger in height and weight than you actually are. Is it possible he came in with a prosthetic heel?
Yeah, for sure it's possible. What this reminds me of, Clay, I used to run a nightclub on State Street in beautiful Santa Barbara, California. At the end of the night, when they would turn the house lights on and we would start cleaning up the club, there would be the fake gel boobs on the floor.
Everywhere. Girls just pop them right
yes.
out.
There would be two, three, four of them, you know, throughout the club, and the bouncer would pick one up and show everybody. Now, the women do it for obvious reasons, and if you're Kyler Murray, you would do it for an obvious reason too. But what I will say in his defense on this, he is on record, and right here on our network on the Dan Patrick Show, he told DP months ago, I'm 5'10", I'm right around 5'10". Now, if he had a prosthetic heel like what you're conspiracy theory is, wouldn't he have been 5'11"?
No, because you can't oversell what you are. It's like you're not going to suddenly, if he'd shown up and been 7 feet tall, everybody would have been like, wow. Yeah. Adding a half inch of height is like a girl saying, I'm a C cup, and she's actually a B cup, right? Like, it's a subtle variation where you're like, oh, okay, I can see how that could happen, right? That's what the and by the way, those fake boobs look like chicken cutlets.
Yeah, they sure do.
You just throw them right in. So you think that this conspiracy theory has legs or not legs?
No.
All right. Does anybody believe in my conspiracy theory that they added a fake heel for Kyler Murray to make him taller?
No way.
I think this would be easy to do. I think you could easily.
Well, would need a makeup artist, right? Because they would have to make it look like the color of his skin.
Oh yeah, I mean it would be. I mean, look, it's Hollywood. You would just go retain one of the best, Hollywood people. I mean, look, they make Christian. What's his name? Christian Bale. They made him look like Dick Cheney.
But everything gets out nowadays, so don't you think this would get leaked if he tried to pull that off?
No, because you sign the person who's doing it to like $1 billion non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah, that doesn't work with TMZ out there.
I don't know. I think it could work. I'm just saying, with so much at stake, you know, they had that guy who was like, do you remember when Jared Goff was about to be drafted? There was some guy out there who was like a hand massage expert, and he claimed he could add an inch to somebody's hand. Do you remember that? Look, you guys need to pay better attention to the combine measurements. Does nobody else remember this story?
I don't like there watching was, guys in underwear, Ben.
There was a hand playing. Massage expert, because there was discussion about whether Jared Goff's hand was big enough. And so there was a hand massage expert who was like, I can figure out a way to unlock more inches for you, which, by the way, this hand massage expert could probably be used by a lot of guys all over the place. But he said he could get your maximum hand width, and Jared Goff talked about it. I mean, there's audio of Jared Goff talking about his hand guy, and then he went out and he got, like, the goal is to be over 9 inches. Yeah, that's what she said. But the goal is to be over 9 inches, I think, with your hand, and he was. And
so
it worked.
It's like fake fingertips?
I don't know how it works. But it worked. You guys need to pay better attention. This is why I am running the ship here, because I got this great knowledge about hand massage. And
you have great knowledge on how to cheat the system.
Yeah, right. Everything is about finding an edge, even if you have to go a little bit beyond the line to get that edge. All right, let's cue the music. This is why the animals haven't killed me. They're killing all these people out there trying to play by the rules.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I had a ball constrictor stuck to my face.
Sam, you have a what?
This
is Animal Thunderdome.
What you got for me, Danny G?
All right, Clay, lots of our OutKick audience tweeting this story into us. Did you see the video of this tarantula?
No.
A dinner plate-sized tarantula with a huge appetite preyed on a young opossum during a recent hunt in the Amazon rainforest. This video was put out by the University of Michigan. They've been doing a study on the rainforest, and they say this is an underappreciated source of mortality among vertebrates. In the rainforest, about once or twice a year, they do this video survey there, and they see a surprising amount of death of small vertebrates in the Amazon, likely due to spiders and centipedes. So these spiders and centipedes in the rainforest, they just swallow up large-sized creatures.
If I saw a dinner plate-sized spider, I would never return to the place that I saw the dinner plate-sized spider. In fact, I've got pinpricks like on my arms right now, thinking about how scary it would be. Like, imagine if you just walked into your house or climbed out of bed and the first thing you saw was a dinner plate-sized spider on the ground or on the wall or anywhere else. I'm running the opposite direction. I'm never allowing myself to be in that position again.
All right, now let's go to China. A beekeeper was summoned to the side of a Chinese road when a massive swarm of insects was on his car. A video filmed on the side of the Sichuan Province road shows the bees swarming over one side of a parked car.
Yeah, and this usually happens like when the queen disappears, right? Like the bees, if you somehow end up, sometimes this happens every now and then where a car, maybe like the queen of the hive, is attracted to a car or an engine for some reason, and somebody starts to drive, and then the entire hive will follow the car. Is this a bee situation too?
In this case, they said the driver said the bees had been surrounding a nearby high voltage power line before moving onto the back of his car. When the beekeeper was called out, he moved the colony, which included two queens, and he was able to get them into a large box for safe transport.
Yeah, that's terrifying. I mean, every now and then you see one of these videos where the bees have just swarmed like a car.
Yeah, like the entire backside of this car is hundreds of thousands of bees. I'll tweet that picture out.
I mean, that's amazing. I would be curious to know, did the guy call from a cell phone? Like, I mean, can you imagine suddenly being in a car and having that many bees on your car? You'd be terrified to get out of the car.
He called from his cell, but it was probably a block away from the car.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, what else we got?
Animal rescuers in Oklahoma are asking the public to keep an eye out for a 700-pound longhorn. Victory for this Friday. It escaped from a meat processing plant.
It's a big, big, big year for the Longhorns. They get the win over Auburn, I think it was, in the Sugar Bowl. Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. And they beat Oklahoma at least once, and now they got a Longhorn escaping in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, Lawton Animal Welfare said workers at the meat processing plant there arrived for work around 8 a.m. Wednesday and discovered that the Longhorn was missing from its pen. So they reported it. Somebody saw it. They had reports that it was loose on Interstate 44. Authorities were unable to capture it, though, and so they put out this post. If a vehicle, including trucks, come in contact with this animal, please get a hold of us. The owner said that the bovine is gentle towards people that it knows, but it's very wary of strangers.
Well, wouldn't everybody be a stranger?
Yeah.
I mean, the odds of the longhorn knowing somebody who it meets out in the community, I would think would be pretty low, given that they've never met. So I don't know that we need to know that it's gentle for people that it knows, because that's kind of unnecessary information there. All right, that is the Animal Thunderdome. Encourage you to go download the podcast. Make sure that we add that to your repertoire. You can search out OutKick. You can search out Clay Travis. All the cool kids are doing it. And Danny G, we've now formatted the podcast so that it is designed specifically for podcast listeners, right?
Yeah, so we're going the extra mile. It's shorter, it's more to the point, and it's more Clay, unfortunately.
Well, that's perfect. I mean, who could not want more of me?
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.